It's the Afternoon Underdogs on 790 KRD. Now, here's Tony Bonetti and Dave Jennings.
Guess what day it is? Huh? Anybody? Julie, hey, guess what day it is? Oh, come on, I know you can hear me. Mike. What day is it, Mike? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo! Oh, baby, it is hump day as we hear Van Halen from Diver Down, the album that almost broke up the band.
Oh, it should have.
I'm Dwight Whitten, that's Dave Jennings, and right across from me is Will Sasquatch Clark.
Yo.
Man, I'm happy it's a Wednesday. Tony Bonetti is out today. He will maybe be back tomorrow.
He has your monkey paws.
No, he said he's sweating, I think it's the change.
Is he going through menopause?
Yeah.
Monkeypox.
Menopause.
It's not monkeypox. Well, it could be menopause.
Yeah, I think it is.
It could be menopause. So, anyway.
It's a great horse.
Tony, if you're listening, and we mean this sincerely.
We're stealing all the stuff out of what's left in your office.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Not that he would notice anyway.
No.
Tony Dow's not dead, I guess.
I know. People are on Wally Watch.
I guess.
He's like the new Abe Vigoda. Facebook killed him off, and then it turns out he's very alive.
But how sad is this, though? The wife.
The wife, I know.
She's not there. She heard he was dead, and she reported it. The son and his wife are there and said, no. Wally's hanging in there.
Now, there's been plenty of times when Susan and I were having special lady time where I thought she was dead. But not.
No, this is about Wally, not the beaver.
Okay. Yeah. Ah, well done. Dave Jennings, that is $5 out of the jar. $5 out of the jar.
Woo!
I wonder if Tony Dow was on Facebook.
Get some cold cuts today.
I wonder if Tony Dow was on Facebook and just scrolled and went, wait a minute. And texted his wife, no, honey, I'm not dead. I'm watching Guiding Light.
Yeah.
Well, at any rate.
It doesn't sound good. There's been battling cancer.
Oh, is he in bad shape?
Yeah, but he's still in hospice.
I didn't know he's in hospice. Wow.
I don't know. At this point, I take it with a grain of salt that he's in hospice, because I also saw that on Facebook, which is the same place where they killed him off. So.
Right. But here's the thing about when all that came out yesterday, it's a busy week for me. I'm covering QMF, doing this show, all kinds of stuff.
Where's my little violin?
So you can't. This show is so
supportive
and cold and rigid.
A lot of cynicism during these three hours.
But anyway, the thing that shocked me was that Tony Dow from Leave It to Beaver fame, dead at 77. I thought, I looked at Susan. I would have thought he'd been a lot older than that.
You'd think.
So how old? Okay, now we got to do.
We have to do math.
Now we have to look up Jerry Mathers.
Now Jerry Mathers is the Beaver.
I know.
He's dead, isn't
he's alive.
But I'm saying if the big brother is 77.
That's true. Well, it's.
Okay, how is this?
Tony Dow, he's probably using some kind of chemical thing.
How is this possible? All right. He's only 3 years younger because Wally was always way bigger than the beaver, right?
Growth hormones.
Yep.
It says that. It says he's only 74 years old, the beaver.
I figured they would have both been older, if we're going to be honest.
No, I know. Me too. So anyway,
it's hard to tell how old a beaver is. It really is.
Well, you got to cut them in half.
Yeah.
Or you got to look in.
I don't think it's like a tree stump.
Don't let it go. Let it go.
Daggone it, but I want to.
I know you do.
Okay, yeah. I want to do it.
I know you do.
All right, I don't know. When was the big Mega Millions? Was that?
Last night.
Last night. Nobody hit it.
You got to be kidding me.
So, it's $1 billion if you take the cash option. $602.5 million.
Oh my gosh!
Drawings on Friday. Playing accordion.
Nobody hit it.
It's
like Rosie O'Donnell.
Dave, you're going to drain this damn bad joke jar for.
Oh, he'll give it back.
That's two more. Yeah, all right. So,
yeah, I have the jokes today.
I thought this was. Yeah, well, you get immunity music.
True that.
So I thought this was really cool, even though Raising Cane. Did you see the thing? The owner of the Raising Cane's chicken franchise. He saw how big the Mega Millions was. He's got 50,000 employees. The guy's name's Todd Graves.
Hi, Todd.
Hi, Todd. So Todd Graves, the owner, the CEO of Raising Cane's Chicken. He
goes, great chicken fingers, by the way.
I've got 50,000 employees. It's $2 a ticket. He plopped down $110,000 to make sure there was a ticket for everybody. And if it was going to hit, he was going to let everybody split it.
It was like 16 grand, wasn't it, after taxes,
yeah,
something
grand.
Like that?
Yeah, yeah, like because they were going to take the – because last night, if you had hit it, the cash payout was like 400 some odd million.
Okay.
So now – so based on that, so assuming he does the same thing for Friday, which, I mean, why not? What do you care? You're selling – you've probably sold $110,000 in chicken yesterday.
Just because of the free, yeah.
Yeah.
Because we're all talking about Raising Cane chicken right
so,
now.
Oh, so it was 16,000 bucks at 400 and whatever million, and now it's 600 million. So it's got to be getting close to like 20 grand a person.
Well, and see, here's a shocker. Y'all sit down. Sit down for a second, Dave. Okay, now Dave's sitting down.
All right.
I'm not that good at math.
What?
I know.
When did this happen?
I know. I've been faking it all these years. But when I first read this story, I thought, man, how stupid is this guy? Because if he does hit, all of his employees will say, all right, we're taking it. See you later. We're never working again. I didn't realize it was only going to be 17,000.
Yeah, that's not enough to give up your career.
Right.
Well, I hope it's not a career.
Right,
necessarily.
Right. And by the way, if you're wanting the best chicken, go to Donger's BP.
Okay, dear Squatchy, are you ready?
All right, what we got?
Okay, I've got to get some music for this.
Oh, that's good. See, this encompasses what Sasquatch is. Kind and gentle and caring. Always there with a friendly ear to listen to your problems.
That's what Jane is hoping. Jane writes
Hi, Jane, and thanks for listening.
Yeah, how's it going?
Dear Squatchy.
Yup.
Okay.
I've known my best friend since we were kids, and we are as close as ever.
Oh, good for you.
That's good.
While she is a great person, she has terrible taste in men.
Oh. Well, that sounds like a personal problem.
And because of this, she's been really unlucky in love.
Oh.
She's already been married twice and divorced because both guys cheated on her. Well, for the past year, she's been dating a new guy.
Uh-oh.
Although he reminds me of all of her other exes.
Well, I mean, I guess if you're going to make the same mistake, why not make it three times?
No, we'll go ahead.
She just told thank you, Lionel Richie.
Patrick.
She just told me that they've decided to run off to Vegas to get married, and she wants me to be there.
But, to
be honest, I don't want to go. I've already spent a ton of money on her other weddings, and I really don't want to spend the money to fly to Vegas and see her commit to another marriage that's bound to fail.
Am I
wrong for feeling this way? What do I do?
No.
Squatchy.
You are not. You should take my approach.
Oh, here we go. Okay.
Which is, anytime you get an invitation for a wedding, you're sick that day. I will spend way more time, effort, and money to get out of going to a wedding than I will going to one.
Yes!
I have no...
There you go.
Look, I feel bad for the people that had to come to my wedding, because I know they had the same looks on their faces that I do when I have to sit through everybody else's. They're like, oh, is this thing over yet?
And what happened to all the food?
Well, we tried to eat it in the hotel, but they never microwaved, so most of it went to waste.
I will say this. When I was getting married to Susan, asked Tony about this. I was apologizing as I was asking people.
To Susan?
No, as I was asking people to be on, you know, you got to have these people stand up with you, or, you know, groomsmen. As I were asking them to be as part of the wedding party, I was apologizing. I'm so sorry.
Did you guys do groom gifts?
Yeah.
Groomsmen gifts?
I did.
But, like, the biggest insult that you could give me is a wedding invitation.
Oh, me too. Me too.
Because, like, now you've put me in a position where I'm going to have to tell you no.
Or...
Because I'm not, like...
I wish there was just, like, a buyout option. You know what I'm saying? Where it said, hey, we would love you to join us for this special day on the 25th or whatever at 00 o'clock, or you could buy your way out of this for $100.
See, I would do that. I would I would cash out every time.
Me too.
That's a good idea.
Well, don't you think so?
Just send me the link to the registry. I'll buy you a toaster, and I'm in the clear.
Like, for example, my wedding invitation, you had to check Baranos or Skyline for dinner. You know?
Okay.
So you could have just had 2 months. You know, attend the wedding or the buyout underneath that.
I mean, $50 for the gift, reception only.
Mm-hmm.
No, no, no. $100 gift.
No, I don't even want to go to the reception. Only.
Okay, maybe $100, nothing at all.
Yeah.
$50 gift if you at least come to the reception.
Right.
Huh?
Now we're cooking.
Cash only, no toasters, no good china that nobody ever uses.
And then you owe a card if you actually show up.
Yeah. I think we've revolutionized the wedding business.
Yeah. Take that, J-Lo.
Hey, I want to say congratulations to somebody. He's a martial artist out of Germany.
Bill Cox.
No, I thought it was going to be Bill Cox, too, Carl.
But, you know, because he's in with Big Ninja.
And I thought it might have been that other guy that you're always, what's his name? Now?
Noel Hargrave.
Yes, right.
Yeah, him.
No, but it wasn't. It was
Jesse Dixon.
No, it wasn't him either. It wasn't Jesse.
I don't reckon I know nobody named Jerry.
Okay, well,
we didn't bring up Jerry.
Who's Jerry?
Hey, Carl.
I don't reckon that quite satisfied me.
Well, geez, well, sorry.
Oh, you're the one jumping in. Between you and Fauci, we can't get it. So anyway, congratulations to Germany's martial artist, Muhammad.
Let me guess, Dieter. No. Something.
Muhammad Karamovic.
Bojangles.
Muhammad Bojangles has broken the Guinness Book of World Records by smashing 148 coconuts by his hands in 1 minute.
Oh, hope he's not gay.
Like, why is this even a useful record? Is this in case he gets stuck on an island or something?
Listen, man, if coconuts ever attack,
he'd be useful.
You're gonna want Muhammad Bojangles on your side.
Well, yeah. Give me the director of Ninja Relations over there.
That sounds like another Tim Burton movie with Johnny Depp.
Best
when coconuts attack.
My favorite Bruce
Lee line. Fox special.
My favorite Bruce Lee line by my second favorite Bruce Lee line by a million miles is when the guy comes up and breaks all those boards in front of him. He just looks at him and goes, "Boards don't hit back."
Paint a fence.
Anyway, they nicknamed him Hammer Hands, and this is not his. this is not the only record that Hammer Hands has broken. He's broken in numerous Guinness Book of World Records by breaking objects in his hands. As far as the coconuts, this is the sixth time that Muhammad Bojangles, a.k.a. Hammer Hands, has broken this particular record. So he comes back and breaks his own record.
Because he has nothing else to do. He has no skill set other than punching stuff.
Oh, there's the immunity music, and it means it's time for Wednesdays, a.k.a. Hump Days. Joke of the day, and here to do the honor is our very own Dave Jennings. Hey, D-Train.
Hey, what up, boys?
Hey, Dave.
Fellas.
Yes. Yeah.
Got three awesome jokes for you today.
Okay, here we go. They're great.
After an unsuccessful harvest, why did the farmer decide to try a career in music?
Gosh, I don't know. Why did he?
Yeah, that's odd.
Because he found himself with a ton of sick beats.
Yes!
Huh? I should have ended with that, huh?
Yeah, I'm kind of afraid we might be moving in the wrong direction now.
That might have been the closer.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Fellas.
Yay!
Yes, Dave.
Hey, D-Dog.
What brand of underwear do scientists wear? Fauci? No.
I wear Hanes thong underwear.
We don't know. What kind of underwear do scientists wear?
Calvin Klein.
Well, it wasn't as bad as I thought it would be.
Okay, let's get the third one in here.
Here we go.
All right, this is usually where we get too close
like
to the
song.
Sounds
like my wife's college years.
I don't know why I was thinking about this last night, but I was thinking about inventions. And I thought, you know, of all the inventions over the last 100 years, the dry erase board has to be the most remarkable.
You oh, really?
So? Why?
Yeah, why is that?
Yeah. Ah, the most remarkable.
We completely missed it!
Yes! That's how you know a great joke. Hey, folks, stick around.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Hey, listen, don't be tricked by any of these traveling hot tub sales that are going on. Folks, Southern Comfort Hot Tub is who Susan and I went with when we wanted our hot tub. Why? Because they're the best. They've been around like 40 years, and they're not going anywhere. Buyer beware of any of these traveling. You know, they come to convention centers, they get your hot tub for $50, whatever they say. Just be cautious, because what are you going to do if you have an issue with your hot tub? They're long gone. They're in another city. Southern Comfort Hot Tubs, they've been around for 40 years. They're not going anywhere. Todd Gibson and his family own that business, and they've been there for 40 years. They're not going anywhere. 7501 Preston Highway. Right now, you got a summer sale going on. We save thousands of dollars on beautiful, beautiful hot tubs that I promise will be a vacation for you and your family every single night right there in your own backyard. Not to mention, 12 months, same as cash. Southern Comfort Hot Tubs, baby. You're going to love them. 7501. On Preston Highway.
It's a beautiful day in this neighborhood, a beautiful day for a neighbor. Would you be mine? Could you be mine? It's a neighborly day in this beauty wood, a neighborly day for a beauty. Would you be mine? Could you be mine?
Are you a good neighbor?
I have always wanted to.
I'm not.
We know.
I've always wanted to live in a neighborhood.
He is
a great neighbor.
You think about that? But he invites, like, the mailman in. He thinks he's doing, hey, mailman, come in. He doesn't realize the mailman's just trying to get his route done. Or I guess I should say the non-gender-specific mail personnel. It's just trying to get them their route done.
Come here, son. I got a book I want you to read.
These are the unwritten rules for being a good neighbor. Let's participate and see how many of these we are or are not, Dave.
Let's see.
First one I'm in there, I'm good with this one. This should go without saying, but the amount of people that get the wrong package delivered to their door and just keep it is absolutely shameful.
Who does that?
I've never done that. I've always walked down, and here's what I will do. I'll sit the package on the porch, ring the doorbell, and sprint. You know, that's what I'll do.
No, our packages get dropped off at Natalie's next door all the time because it'll say delivered. I'll look out front, nothing, go next door, just wave at her through her ring camera and grab our package.
Well, there's oftentimes, like if you Amazon or something like that, they'll send you a picture of the package.
Always blurry.
Yeah, I know, but I know my porch and I know some of my neighbor's porch.
Why do you know their porches?
So, because, you know, we get out and we walk with Lemmy and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So I said, hey, I recognize that porch.
There's a guy walking his son in our yard. What the heck is that?
There's been a lot of activity.
The heck? Usually
out front.
Usually it's geese.
I know. Maybe they're geese hunters.
And gunfire.
We got plenty of dog or geese poop out there.
No kidding.
These are unwritten rules for being a good neighbor. If you live in a townhome, sometimes there's no assigned spots. But
that's the worst when you have an assigned parking spot and you get home late at night and
somebody's in there.
In it.
But if a space is wide enough to fit two cars, don't park smack dab in the middle of the space.
Or spack.
You never want to spack a car.
Do not spack it.
No,
you'll go blind.
Right. I'm a heavy spacker. If you have a party, we don't have parties. If you have a party, let your neighbors know. Say, I'm throwing a party. If we get too loud, just give me a phone call, send me a text.
Whatever. If the music gets too loud or the smoke from the grills goes in your backyard and it interferes with your nasal passages, just let us know.
Something like that's coming up.
Oh, I don't doubt it. If our Maureen McGovern music is too loud, text me, okay?
My in-law, Scott and Kathy, have a huge party every Memorial Day weekend.
Invite the neighbors.
They do.
Yeah.
But they don't invite. They invite the neighborhood.
Right.
Huge party. But it makes it easy for me to do the Irish goodbye. Show up, take a couple of pictures, and kind of sneak out of the crowd.
The 1-2-3 Johnny.
That's right, baby.
I used to go to that party, but it was too loud, and there was drinking.
Don't let your pets poop in someone else's yard. If your dog goes during your neighborhood walk, pick it up. No one wants to step and poop. Now, that's something that my sister-in-law, Kathy Tyler Young, has trained her dog Twinkie to do. Twinkie will not go to the restroom in her yard. She's trained her to go into a neighbor named Bill White's yard and duty.
Eventually, the duty becomes white.
Yep.
We never see it because we just pick up after our dog.
Right, Kathy.
We hung some by our mailbox so people walking by could get the hint. Here's poop bags. Please use them.
Make sure that you're nodding an acquaintance to neighbors. And if you can, go a little bit more than that and get to know your neighbors somewhat. Because if there's a bit of an emotional level, they're more than likely to notice unusual, suspicious activity around your home.
Now, that'll happen. Dan across the street will text me. Did my kids close the garage door? Peek outside. Yep, you're good. good to know your neighbors.
It is.
We got Randy and Don.
On some parts.
Another Don.
This is, I'm guilty of doing this, but I want to throw a BS flag on this.
Okay.
You know that I use a smoker to cook our food, and I'm smoking
you're
on
getting, you're good at it.
And I'm smoking on it for probably 3, maybe 4 days a week. It says if you're having a barbecue, let your neighbor, give your neighbor a heads up because the smoke will get into their house. If you don't know if someone's air conditioner is taking in the smoke, it might have a temporary or long-term effects on their breathing. I'm calling BS.
See earlier answer.
I'm calling BS on that one.
I am going to grill.
Right, though?
I would like a gentle smell of Dwight's smoked ribs wafting throughout my house.
Well, that brings us to Dwight's privacy fence.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, that's right, neighbors. I have that privacy fence there for a reason. If there's a privacy fence, please don't peer over it. We have a pool, and our older neighbors always want to look over and say hi to us when we're sunbathing.
Don't pull a Kilroy.
No, no.
Or a Wilson.
But, you know, if you do have a privacy fence, don't peek over it, right? I mean, isn't that common sense?
And they know you. Why would they peek
right,
over
it? Right, I know. Well, they did one time, and then for some reason they never did.
I wonder why.
I find the balance of minding your own business and looking out for your neighbor. If your neighbor's dog is out, yeah, by all means, say, hey, you know, Sparkles got out. Go get Sparkles.
Sparkles?
I don't know. I'm kind of come up with one of my neighbor's dog's name. All my neighbors have these itty-bitty little dogs.
Right. Now, don't make fun of little dogs.
I'm not.
I've got three of them. Okay.
I'm not just saying.
All right.
I love your dogs. Chihuahuas.
Just people go, oh, you out walking your rat.
The little dog across the street from us. His name is Mr. Watson. I love
this.
Yes.
Mr.
Me and Mr. Watson, we babysitted. He's one of these white dogs. I don't know what they're called.
Like a Bichon Frise?
No, with the ears.
Well, most of them have those.
Golly. I can't think of it.
That's all right, then.
That doesn't matter. So that's it.
All right, here we go. You ready? A little oh, that's not the 90s music I wanted. Let me
baby,
do this here.
Baby.
Oh, here we go. The much maligned Nickelback.
Yes.
This is from BuzzFeed. People shared the things that were normal in the 90s but don't exist anymore. Things we all grew up with that millennials might say, eh? This one was awesome. Being completely unreachable by anyone for an entire day or more with no one thinking that it was unusual or rude.
So fantastic.
Now it's, he hasn't answered my text within 4 minutes.
Right.
4 minutes. He's always looking at his phone. 4 minutes. Next time I'm going to wait 5 minutes. Taking your disposable camera to get developed and having no idea if any of your pictures were even good.
You remember having to take them to the photo mat?
Yes.
And that big day, 3, maybe 4 weeks later, you would show up, you'd ride your bike up to the photo mat and go, hey, are they here? No, they're not here yet, kid.
We spent 2 weeks in Florida. These pictures all suck.
I know.
I look fat in every one of them. Calling the movie theater or looking in the newspaper for movie time.
Mm.
Waiting for that wheel of death.
Right.
I just missed it. Ugh. When picking up someone from the airport, you could actually wait for them at their gate.
Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Even more impressive, you could go wave them goodbye as they got onto the plane.
Before we all had cell phones, you'd give a meeting point and a meeting time in case someone got lost.
Yeah, absolutely. Kings Island, if we get lost, we meet at this Scooby-Doo statue.
That's right.
At a quarter to anything.
Bingo. Waiting for the bus without doing anything else but just sitting and waiting.
Or smoking.
Yeah, well, you still do that. I don't know why this is dated. Reading the back of the shampoo bottle while you're sitting down and doing number two.
Never done that. I'm pretty much just get in and get out guy.
Yeah, wait till you have to get it done and then just get it done.
Yeah, of course.
I don't get the lingerers or the readers.
And there's people that go, they start walking in the hallway with a newspaper under their arm. And first of all, you're announcing to everybody what you're
right.
going to do. But number two, no pun intended, just go ahead and do your business. Get out. But
that's the same guy as fake golf swing guy.
Right, exactly.
In between them. Yeah. Wait, hold on a second. Bill, are you a golfer? That is so exotic. Are you good?
Let me just practice my golf swing while we have this conversation about my grandmother.
Three things that men always lie about: their income, their equipment, and their golf game.
Yes.
I don't know why they lie about it, because all three will be discovered. The first two by a woman or a guy.
Right.
The last one by the buddies.
Right.
As you shoot 105 when you claim you shoot 78 all the time.
Right.
I don't know what's going on today.
Must be this course.
Must be the course. I'm just off.
This is not a regulation course, obviously.
We used to rent movies, video games, VCRs, and game consoles. Good old rentals. I think you can still do that at a GameStop, right?
Yeah, but we never rented anything. I don't. Was that an option with Ataris?
I'm not sure about the console, but the games, yeah.
Really?
And landline home phones. I forgot about this part. Having to talk to your friend's parents for a few minutes while you waited for your friend to come to the phone.
Oh, that was horrible.
Dwight, I got your pictures.
Okay, well, sorry, Mrs. Landers.
Except the cell phone hasn't been invented yet, Mrs. Landers. The pictures are at Walgreens, actually. I'll drop by when I have them.
You'll get them in 2 to 3 weeks. Hey, all right, listen. We think that Tony may be back tomorrow. We don't know. We're going to find out if it's anybody's bed.
He needs to go to Lots of Pasta
and
get some chicken noodle soup. They always have that in the freezer every day. At the deli counter, they'll have 3 new homemade soups, including something for a vegetarian. I brought you in because I found it again, the Boar's Head Robust Italian Chicken Sausage.
Folks, you're going to go buy Lots of Pasta right here and today. Right now, if you can, because these chicken sausages, they're amazing. You pair that with a rattlesnake cheese, a Wisconsin cheddar that's infused with tequila and habanero. I'm telling you, you're never going back to anything else.
Nope, absolutely not. Boxed lunches, if you have meetings at work, if you're entertaining, you can do family-sized entrees and feed a big group for about $4.50 a head for a couple of bucks more. You can add a salad. The cafe is open. You can have a cup of coffee, even a cold beer. Get a six-pack to go, including some local craft beer. Those are four packs in some cases. All of that at Lots of Pasta. So good, they've been there for 40-plus years.
Patty Wooten said on Twitter that every time she comes to Louisville from Paducah, she brings a cooler just specifically to go to Lots of Pasta. Find out for yourself in person why Lots of Pasta is so great.
My apologies continue. See, it was Mick Jagger's birthday yesterday, and I missed it, so I'm honoring Maureen McGovern. Yeah. I suggested she had a hit. This was the love theme from Superman. Another hit for Maureen McGovern. My apologies across the board. I'm dropping the ball.
Boy, you
like
the
Lance
word,
Armstrong.
You used the word hit liberally.
Yeah.
It does.
Two is technically plural.
We're going to send Dr. Fauci over to Vanetti's place to get him examined, see if we can't get him back tomorrow. Look at me, quivering like a little girl, shivering. You can see right through me. Can you read my mind? Listen to that right there, man. That's what I'm talking about. Let's bring in Kansas Mike. Got a brand new album out. It's the 11th album, I believe. Let's bring her in real quick. Candace, how are you?
I'm doing great. This music is waking me up. I love it. It's perfect for the morning.
Yes.
How about that beautiful voice? I can't help but think when I'm thinking about you and Richie Blackmore. I got to think that you're living in an old castle with lamps and candles lighting the way, just a medieval kind of lifestyle. But I know that's probably not true.
A lot of people do think that. A lot of people think I live in a castle and Richie lives in. But the truth is, that would be way too much for me to clean.
That's why you have people.
Let's talk about this 11th album. It's fantastic, and it's your 11th album together with your husband. And he's probably nearby, so that may influence your answer. But is it difficult working on a musical project with your husband? Because my wife and I don't know if creatively if we would get along so well.
It's a tricky balance. And he is nearby. He's upstairs. But, you know, this is the AM hour, so he's asleep. He's on musician hours. He's not waking up. He didn't do anything like this. He's up at 2. You know, he's English, so I think he's still on English time. I think that's what the deal is with him. But we just say musician's hours, and he gets up about 5 o'clock. So, you know, but it is fun working with Richie. And I know a lot of people probably wouldn't use the word fun when it comes to my husband. But that conservatively.
Oh.
But you know, when you head into the studio or even like just writing with someone, who's had the history that he's had, or just like who can play the instruments that he can play the way he can play them. It's just always fascinating. I just love to just sometimes sit and just watch him go. You know, it's almost like being front row at the concert, and, but it's just him like sitting on the couch, and he's always playing every day, and just amazing to watch. Even how his mind works, how when he's composing, when he's working on the not only the instrumentation for the songs, and he's playing mandola, mandolin, hurdy-gurdy, nickel harps, as well as electric guitars and acoustic guitars. So, and he works on, you know, the construction of the works of the songs and the instrumentation, and it's just fascinating to watch him go.
Well, Candace, let's go back just a little bit. I think you used to work in radio also, and I've never been a big autograph person. I don't want to bother people or find out they're a jerk. That would disappoint me. But once upon a time, you asked a guy for an autograph, and maybe 20 years later, you got hitched. How did that work out?
Look how that worked out for me, right? I don't know, you might want to ask people for autographs. I don't know if you're single or not, but...
No, happily married. So tell us how you met.
Well,
can I have your autograph?
Too late, Dwight.
Oh, you never know where that's going to lead. I am, like, sensitive to that. But, yeah, so I was working for a radio station out here on Long Island for about a year and a half, classic rock radio station called WBAB. And I was also going to school because I loved music so much, just like I'm sure you guys got involved with radio because it's just music is just it.
Absolutely.
You know, it's amazing. So when I was going to school, I was thinking, okay, I need to be around music. I didn't think I'd be the one on stage. But I wanted to be around it and choose that as my career path. So I was thinking, I don't know, maybe working in a studio. I was taking audio recording lessons, you know, on that. I was also working at the station, trying different areas of that. And then I thought if that didn't work out, maybe I'll work for a record company. But it had to be something with music. And then what happened was the guys from Purple or their representatives called up our radio station one day when they were in town, and they asked if we would play a charity soccer match. Which, of course, their English is they said charity football match, but which got confusing. But then we wound up bringing our guys to the field, and the only people from Purple who showed up was Richie, who loved playing soccer, and Roger, bass player. And the other people he had on his soccer team were all, which we didn't know, complete ringers from Europe. So guys who, like, are basically born with a soccer ball in their hands, like, they annihilated our DJs. They, like, killed us. So it was embarrassing. But I was trying to do the right thing. So afterwards, I, you know, went over with just a group of other people, you know, who were there for his autographs waiting on the side of the field. And I waited my turn, and I said, you know, good luck. You know, it was a great job on the game, you know, trying to do the sportsmanlike thing. And I asked him for an autograph. And at that moment, he actually looked up and, you know, with that English accent, and he said, oh, you know, you're a very beautiful girl. And I went, oh, thank you. I took my autograph. I was like, that was going to be my Richie Blackmore story, was that, oh, he said I was beautiful. Here's my autograph. Wasn't that nice? It was a good memory. But he actually sent a roadie through the crowd to find out who I was and to ask me to meet him at a pub later on. And I met him with a friend of mine, and him and his roadie sat there, and we just sat and talked until the bar closed down. We just talked about everything for hours and really just connected on so many levels. And it started off as a friendship. Normal evolution of relationships started off as a friendship and then kind of grew from there. And at this year, it's going to be 32 years that we've been together.
Wow.
In 1980.
Wow.
And ironically, I was at his concert 6 months before that when it was Guns N' Roses, Deep Purple, and Aerosmith in the Meadowlands. I was like in the audience, like cheering them on and going crazy in the audience. So,
and you had no idea.
No
That's
idea
crazy.
Where life was going to take me.
A similar story happened with me and Cyndi Lauper, but she asked me to a pub, and then she left me with the check, and my wristwatch and wallet was stolen. I don't want to get into that. I want to talk about your new album, Candace Knight, Blackmore's Night. It's amazing because what you all do is you go back and you take music from the 12th all the way to the 15th century. And first of all, I think it's amazing that this music is preserved by getting passed on from generation to generation. Is it difficult for you and Richie to find these songs and authenticate them? Or is there just more material out there than I would know?
There's so much material out there, but I'm actually very lucky because, you know, Richie's a lot older than me, so I think he might have been born in that century. I'm not sure.
Sir Richie.
No, he's actually, you know, it's funny because he's he loves this music so much. And I think anybody who's a big Blackmore fan, who's basically followed him from the early days, they've seen him on stage when he's playing with Purple, and he gets out there, and the first thing he starts jamming on is Greensleeves, you know? And then he goes and performs Rainbow, and he's doing Temple of the King or 16th Century Greensleeves or any of these songs that really kind of are inspired by Renaissance or medieval times. So this was kind of like a natural progression, I think, of his musicality. He would always listen to purest Renaissance and medieval music when he was off stage or around the house, and that's basically really all he listens to. He just absolutely loves that stuff. So, and now he's not a technology guy. He doesn't even have a cell phone. So I always say, you know, if he gets into trouble, he kind of has to send out like a carrier pigeon or something, because I can't hear him with anything, or a smoke signal or something.
But you know what? I would bet you he's way less stressed than you and I, Candace.
Oh, I'm so sure about it. I'm sure. Absolutely. But it's funny because now at least he'll go on, you know, he's got a tablet. Some of his friends bought him a tablet for his birthday a couple of years back. But he can go on YouTube and find even more medieval Renaissance music. So there's a lot of it out there. It's pretty incredible stuff. And the melodies are just as strong and just as amazing, you know, today as they were back then. I think back then when they really had strong riffs, but they were played on double reed woodwind instruments. Mm-hmm. So they're kind of like the rock music of that day. If you took those riffs and they weren't played on shams and rauschweiss and bombards and things like that, and you play them on electric guitar, it would be just as strong as a melody line or a riff that as you would have a couple hundred years ago. So it's interesting.
Yeah, Candace, I love the record. It has that medieval folk feel, but there are some really cool instrumentals where Richie plugs in his guitar and it's just Richie, and they're got a great classic rock vibe. But there's a song on there, Wish You Were Here, 2021, and I thought, wait a minute, Blackmore's Night doing Pink Floyd. That's going to sound really, really interesting. And then I figured out it was a song by a band called Rednecks. And if you've been to a country bar in the last 25 years, they did Cotton Eye Joe. This song is nothing like that. But first of all, how did you find that tune, and why did you decide to do it again? Because it was on your first album.
That's right. Yeah, we actually discovered that when we were on tour with Rainbow, I think, overseas. That song by the Rednecks wound up being on the charts in Germany. It was number one for 17 weeks.
Wow.
And, of course, it never made it across the pond. Never, like you said, you know Cotton Eye Joe over here from the Rednecks, but you'd never hear that song from them. And that was the one that was a huge hit overseas. So it's amazing. We fell in love with it instantly. That's why we put it on our first album, Shadow of the Moon, back in 97. So it's been 24 years since we kind of put that one out there. But we, you know, it's one of those songs where whenever we play it in concert, we always get requests from the audience to play that song. That's like one of the top five songs that they're yelling out when we ask the audience what they want to hear. The fans just love it no matter where we are, no matter where we go. And, of course, over the course of 24 years and us playing the song, it's taken on a whole other meaning. It's taken on a different, you know, like a different perspective for us, a different interpretation. So we figured now would be a good time to be able to put it back out for people so they can hear it, how we do it on stage, you know, the last couple of years as opposed to how we did it 24 years ago. It's got a new strength to it, a new interpretation to it. And plus, I feel like also not only is it a great song that really kind of wasn't heard over here in America, even though it was, you know, there was a lot of nods to it overseas, but going through this pandemic, I feel like, you know, a lot of us have been on solitary for a really long time, and we're not able to hang out with our friends or our family or in big groups and have as great a time as we used to, or what we used to take for granted as just being in a big groups of people and having fun. And so I feel like it's kind of really poignant at this point, you know, to be able to put that out there, because I'm sure there's a lot of people that are missing a lot of the people that they love or they like spending time with. So I feel like it's a good one for now.
Okay, so now you're sharing the limelight, Candace. You're sharing it with your husband, Richie Blackmore. You've even achieved gold records. Okay, you've been married 32 years. Honestly, it's difficult together.
Yeah.
Is it difficult being a rock star's wife in the beginning? Because think about it, 89, rock is still a great thing. Right now, it's kind of diminished, unfortunately. Being a rock fan, I hate that. But is it difficult being the spouse to a legendary guitarist?
Yeah, that's the funny thing. I honestly feel like the difference between, and the terminology you use is perfect, because when you say the word rock star, I don't, even Richie, he would never define himself as a rock star. For him, that's somebody else. That's not him. Musician, yeah. Like, that's a different thing. He always tells me he picked up the guitar in order to, because he was an introvert. You know, he's not comfortable around people. He doesn't like hanging out in groups. He doesn't do the schmoozing thing. And sometimes he gets slammed for that, you know, not going to the awards ceremonies, not hanging out with the right people or pressing the right palms and, you know, being seen at the right, you know, places and events. He'd rather be home. He's much more comfortable on the couch with his instrument and just, you know, emoting and playing and writing. And he loves what he does. But he says that, you know, because that was his comfort zone and his safe place was to go into the guitar and play, he got good at it, and then everybody wanted to talk to him because of that. Mm-hmm. Dichotomy. But for me, being with someone for that long, as a matter of fact, you said, you know, okay, we've been together 32 years. I moved in with him in 91, met him in 89. We got engaged in 93 and then had the longest engagement probably in human history.
What would you say to Goldie Hawn on this one?
Oh, you're right. You're so right. But yeah, we got married in 2008. And the reason behind that was because I am the oldest of three children, and my brother, who's 2 years younger than me, called me up in 2007 and said, I found the one, I'm getting married next year. And I said, you can't do that because I have to be married first because I'm the older child. I've been waiting for you to get married to him for, you know, over a decade. I'm not waiting anymore. I'm marrying this girl. So when my brother planned his wedding in November of the following year, I planned mine for October, and I got my wedding in right before my brother.
I actually had to fake a pregnancy to get my wife to marry me. She's super hot, but she's not too bright, Candace.
Oh. Hey, Candace, this is literally the sunniest album cover you guys have, including the music. Was that a conscious effort to be really positive after 2020 with this record?
You know, Richie came up with that artwork, and he was inspired by a band of friends of his. They're medieval minstrels. They actually played at our wedding we had a lot of different people bring their instruments to our wedding. It wound up being a big jam session. But they were called Disguiers, and this was their idea, and they actually have it all cut out in wood, and wherever they go, they travel and just take it out of their little packs, and they put it out in front of the stage, and they play to, you know, just a handful of people, but they play all the really authentic instruments. And so it's basically a cop of exactly what their artwork was like, but then Richie actually drew it out, and it's very simplified, and it's just, but I feel like it's just perfect, and it's just what we need right now. It just wound up being perfect for the magic of nature. Even the songs are taking on a new meaning now that we're kind of seeing the light coming out of this pandemic, a little hope on the horizon, and getting back to that beautiful spring weather coming out of the darkness of winter, and just really feeling the rays of the sun in our face, and getting healed not only by nature but by the music. So we feel like it's a really symbolic thing to be able to put out there for people to see.
Her name is Candace Knight. The new album is Blackmore's Night, along with her husband, Richie Blackmore. It's the 11th album, and boy, is it ever good. Crank it up. Get it today. Candace, always great to talk to you. Thank you so much for the time. You're amazing.
Thank you guys so much. I'll talk to you soon. Take care.
Go go wake up Richie. There you go.
Nate.
I'm not going near that. Are you kidding me? No way.
Nature's Light is the new album. It's awesome.
It's the Afternoon Underdogs on 790 KRD. Now, here's Tony Bonetti and Dave Jennings.
All right, glad to have you back on kind of this hodgepodge Wednesday. Dave Jennings, Dwight Whitten, Tony Bonetti magically appearing here and there. I think it's time for a little college football talk. Nick Coffey had a good chat this morning with one of his insiders. It's Brian Edwards. So let's journey, if you will, with me
into the red zone.
All right, let's bring him in. He's our guy, Brian Edwards of VegasInsider.com. Before we talk about some college football win totals and futures, I think the biggest topic surrounding college football this summer, especially recently, has been conference realignment. I know you're down there in SEC country. What do you think happens from here on out? Obviously, a big move with Texas, Oklahoma on the way to the SEC, and then, of course, now the UCLA, USC move to the Big Ten. You think the movement has stopped for the time being?
Well, it seems like it until there's a decision by Notre Dame, and it seems like once they decide what they'll do, which I guess they're going to try to stay independent, but you would think that they would eventually go probably Big Ten, and then at that point, then maybe some more dominoes start falling. But who knows? We'll see.
Yeah, it is wild how, you know, I think Notre Dame, they are the snobs of college football. They feel elite to where they can stay by themselves and have their own TV deal, but the amount of money that could potentially be there for them in either the SEC or the Big Ten, for that matter, it may be a financial decision they just can't turn down, right?
I would think so, but I kind of just wish everything would stay put as is right now, but I doubt that's going to happen. But, you know, maybe another year or two, but it seems like more change is definitely on the horizon.
Yep, no doubt. All right, so Brian Edwards, VegasInsider.com is our guest. We're talking some college football. Now, let's start with the win totals for the local teams around here. Louisville coming off of a 6-7 season. In fact, back-to-back losing seasons for Scott Satterfield. He's got a lot of momentum right now in recruiting, surprisingly. But on the field, the results just have not been there. And FanDuel Sportsbook, they've got the win total set at 5.5. I remember you and I chatted about this as soon as the line came out, and you really weren't that surprised that that was what it was set at. There's a lot of toss-up games on this schedule, a lot of games they're going to be dogs in, right?
Yeah, so now DraftKings has it at 6.5, but it's juiced to the under, -125, whereas FanDuel, you got to pay -165, which means risk 165 to win 100 if you like Louisville over 5.5. So first time I looked through the schedule, I'm marking 3-3 with 6 swing games, the swing games being at Syracuse, at UCF, at Virginia, and then Pitt, Wake Forest, and NC State at home, which are three of their three toughest probably ACC games outside of at Clemson, at least to get them at home. And then breaking those down that I think are really tight, almost coin flip type games, I think Louisville probably goes 3-3 to finish 6-6. But I mean, it could go a lot better. He did a good job in the transfer portal, ranked 18th in the nation in just like specific transfers coming in by 24/7 Sports, 12 total guys, 7 from Power 5 programs. And Phil Steele's depth chart, he lists 5 of these transfers as starters on defense. You got Sonogo from Ole Miss, who's got 210 career tackles. You got a first team SDS All-American and Nicario Harper joining the secondary. Cunningham has been, really, really good, especially running the ball and a pretty darn good passer. I mean, his career stats are outstanding, 2,619 career rushing yards, 38 touchdowns, more than 8,000 passing yards, 62-24 TDINT ratio. So, and there was a lot of close losses last year, 4-1 possession losses. 3 were by 7 combined points. So, I don't know. I mean, how many has he got to win to keep Louisville from going after Jeff Braun?
Yeah, it's funny. Malik Cunningham is, as you mentioned, his career statistic, his resume is really impressive. It just has not – it has not produced a lot of wins. Like, he doesn't have a good record as a starting quarterback, and it's not necessarily his fault. It is scary to think Louisville's record last year, they may not have won 3 games without him just because of how important he was to him. So I hope for his sake that he's able to finish strong, because he's not the Teddy Bridgewater or the Lamar Jackson, but Louisville's had some really good quarterbacks over the years, and I think statistically speaking, he'd be at least in that top tier, but he doesn't have the wins to show for it. You mentioned Jeff Braun. That's died down a little bit because of the recruiting that's going on, but it'll quickly fire back up, the Brom train. Fans wanting him to come back to Louisville if Louisville does not have a solid season this year. Yeah, when I look at the swing games, essentially, I mean, those are games that, yeah, they could easily beat Virginia. Like, they're games that if they win, nobody'd be super surprised. But also, like, given what they've done the last 2 years, like, nobody's going to be surprised that they lose the opener to Syracuse, who was picked to finish dead last in their division. That's just kind of where Louisville is. Now, sticking with the ACC before we get to Kentucky, when it comes to win totals, there are a couple of ACC teams you like, right? You've got some plays here?
under 3.5 on Georgia Tech. I mean, they just don't have any talent. You look at the schedule. I mean, brutal non-conference. Ole Miss at home, at UCF, at Georgia. I mean, I give them 2 wins, Duke and Western Carolina at home. But then after that, their most winnable games are Virginia at home and at Virginia Tech. And even if they split those, we can win under 3.5. The other, it's actually not a win total. It's I like NC State in week 1, -10 at East Carolina. And it's not fading East Carolina. They're actually going to be pretty good. I just really like this NC State team. I've got them ranked 8th in my power rankings. Their defense returns 10 starters. They were second best in the ACC last year, only gave up 19.7 points per game, and they get Peyton Wilson back, who led the ACC in tackles in 2020 and got his season-ending injury in week 2 last year. So NC State -10 in week 1 and Georgia Tech under 3.5.
Now Pitt, 8.5 over, you like that? Do you think Pitt's going to bounce back without Kenny Pickett?
My apologies. You're right. I do have 2 ACC seasons.
No worries.
Yeah, over 8.5. I mean, even without Addison and Pickett, I think they're going to have a good year. Phil Steele's national unit rankings have them ranked 2nd in the nation on the D-line, 17th on the O-line, 19th at quarterbacks. They've got 3 veteran running backs. They got a transfer receiver from Akron who had a big season last year. Look, that defense is going to be salty. 3 first-team All-ACC members are back on defense and a second-team All-ACC guy. So I think Pitt goes over 8.5. I think they'll be at 9 wins when they go at Miami for the regular season finale, and I think that'll decide who goes to the ACC championship game from that division.
Brian Edwards of Vegas Insider is our guest joining us here on 790 KRD. You guys can follow Brian on Twitter at VegasBEdwards, always putting some good content out there when it comes to college football and other plays when it comes to sports bettings. Now, with Kentucky, you know, I'm looking here at FanDuel. It's at 7.5. I would lean taking the over. I just think their schedule sets up to where they could get to 8, and it wouldn't be that difficult. And also, I just think they've turned themselves into a pretty respectable program. To see them pick to finish 2nd in the SEC East, I think that kind of speaks, one, to some teams that are down a little bit, but also they've kind of earned some respect. What do you think about this 2022 season for Mark Stoops?
Yeah, I think they're going to be pretty good. I initially marked them 6-1 with 5 swing games, and then as I broke it down further, I settled on them going 8-4. It could be a little better than that. You know, we don't know about the suspension on Chris Rodriguez. But, you know, it seems like it's going to be at least a couple games. They're a 4-point underdog at Florida in week 2. I've got the Gators winning that game, but Kentucky could win it. National unit rankings in Phil Steele's mag, they're 17th at running back. And by the way, Kavosi Smoke is a good running back, 5.6 yards per carry average during his career, more than 1,300 yards. So, and 3 of their first 4 games are easy, with the exception being at Florida. You know, I point that out based on the Rodriguez potential suspension. But anywho, they're solid on defense. And I don't think the O-line is going to be quite as good this year, but, I mean, they've had one of the, you know, probably top 10 or 15 O-lines in the country the last couple years. I think they were number 28 in the transfer portal, got 9 transfers, 6 from Power 5 programs. Another solid season, but do they take the next step? Do they beat Georgia at home? Do they, you know, do they really threaten to get to Atlanta, which they've never done? That's the next step for Mark Stoops. We'll see if they can take it.
Are you a believer in Will Levis? Obviously, I know you think he's a good quarterback, but the hype he's got throughout this offseason is pretty unreal. It seems like it's mostly on NFL mock draft boards, but still, right, it's not normal to hear about a Kentucky quarterback getting this kind of love.
Yeah, you know, he's a big guy. He moves and runs it well. He throws a really pretty ball-type spiral, but his decision-making is questionable at times. But, you know, that was his first year as a starter, so we'll see how he grows. He did lead him to a 10-3 record. Now, he threw interceptions at times, but I think it's more just his, you know, reading coverages and making better decisions. I think he's got all the tools. We'll just see how much he's improved once he gets out on the field this year.
Yeah, it's wild because Mark Stoops is obviously, even before they were getting to 10 wins, he has changed Kentucky football from being really just a bottom feeder to where now they're at least expected to be bowling every year. And it's been done with just developing on both sides of the line. Defense is usually pretty solid, decent running backs. But now, you know, last year they added Wandell Robinson, who just gave him a different element, and Will Levis. I mean, Kentucky quarterbacks have been really poor for the most part. Even when they won 10 games with Terry Wilson, it was not because of anything he was doing with his arm. It was because of everything else that that team had on it. But, I'm curious to see if they do take that big step this year. Maybe the year to do it, given how much they return. I've got to ask you, I know you're a Gator guy. What do you make of the early – what's your early impressions about Billy Napier?
Well, I've always liked him, except for his clock management decisions. He's made some left miles, like knucklehead clock management decisions while he was at Louisiana, formerly UL Lafayette. But, man, the results have been good. You know, he took a couple of, you know, strikeouts, if you will, on the recruiting trail about a month ago, but he bounced back really nicely the next couple of weeks. And they've got a big recruiting weekend coming up. I think they're going to get commits from at least 3-4 stars this coming weekend. And I think that'll move him right there on the fringe of the top 10 in the recruiting rankings. So he's doing all that good. I think he's a good, you know, a good person. I like the personality and everything. I just don't want to see him making less miles clock management decisions. That's my concern.
I want to see him get a win on September 10th, okay, against Kentucky. I need that.
Hey, you and I both, brother.
Brian Edwards, always, always appreciate your time, man. Keep up the great work, Brian. We'll talk to you soon, brother.
Sounds good, man. Thanks.
All right, that's Brian Edwards again, VegasInsider.com. Really enjoy talking some college football with Brian again. If you are not following him on Twitter, you should change that because he's always putting out some really good stuff. He is at Vegas B. Edwards on the Twitter sphere.
Boy, this was a big one, man. Remember that album?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
The Master of the Mullet.
I actually, that was one of my favorite songs that he did was I Want My Mullet Back. But think about just that Some Gave All album. How many hits just came off that alone? Absolutely incredible. As we go out to Texas, talk to my buddy Jim Ryan first and foremost. I heard your report earlier that we were playing, and it really interested me. We're talking about schools, and you know it's no big shocker that the school shootings, it's just we're almost becoming numb to them. They happen so often, and people are constantly looking for a way to stop them, to prevent them, and now there's artificial intelligence that may be a part of that, right?
Yeah, it's really interesting to look at this stuff, and there are different tech firms that are working on this kind of technology and marketing it out to school districts specifically. They've already done so with some businesses and corporations, and now they're looking at school districts. According to the Washington Post, more than 250,000 students have been exposed to gun violence in one way or another since 1999. That means that they were either the victims of it, they were witnesses to it, they were in a school when it happened, and you can imagine sort of the mental fatigue that kids are being put through. So this kind of technology is intended to be perhaps a little less obtrusive than a metal detector to walk through. Some of it involves actually existing cameras that can be mounted with radar and can be modified with software such that they can see through backpacks. They can look into a backpack and see if there's anything suspicious in there. And if there is, then a school officer can ask the kid to empty it out, to take a look. So, yeah, these things are out there, and they're, you know, growing in popularity.
Well, now here's an issue, I think. In airports, we talk about those scanners, and some people say, you know what, you can kind of, sort of, see the person naked through those scanners. If this thing can look through a backpack, are there any issues with children and potential nudity?
Well, I mean, there are privacy issues with anything like this. But in the same way that the image that's taken at the airport is immediately deleted and it's supposed to shield your identity, nobody can tell who that is in that picture, this sort of technology is intended to do the same kind of thing. Privacy is always kind of right up there with the security of these things because these companies don't want to get sued, right? For example, here's the drive-through or the pickup or the drop-off site in front of a school. Some schools are looking at using license plate readers there, right? Mm. So that school personnel can tell if a car that shouldn't be there is in the drive-through. But to do that, parents have to buy in. They have to sign up, you know, they have to let the school district know which license plates are authorized to pick up or drop off their kid. So you've got a database of these parents who have given the okay. And therefore, they surrender a little bit of their privacy in the name of safety. so that if somebody who's unauthorized, shouldn't be there, drives in, then the school personnel can check that person out.
Well, you mentioned backpacks and gun and backpacks, and I would like to say that Jefferson County Public Schools here in Louisville is number one when it comes to children with guns and backpacks. But what they don't do is really punish the child. He or she is not really suspended. They give the child and the gun back to the parent, which is ridiculous. But you mentioned backpacks, and I started to think about how every time my wife and I go to any concert, the common theme with all of these venues are you can't bring your purse in. It has to be a clear plastic blah, 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 and it can't be any bigger than this. It seems like along with this software, this artificial intelligence, plastic see-through backpacks might be an option as well.
Well, sure. I mean, if you can see through it, though, you probably wouldn't need that kind of radar technology. But you're right. Some schools do require that clear backpack so that you don't get something untoward onto campus. But so this is intended to kind of normalize life for these kids so that they're not walking around with a see-through backpack. They have a normal backpack. A device is keeping tabs on them to make sure that they're safe and yet not disrupting their whole day. You notice on Google Images, Google Street Image, you can go in there and see pictures of buildings and streets and, but you don't see faces because they're blurred out. And you don't see license plates because they're blurred out. The algorithm or the AI knows to blur those things out. Same could be used in school settings so that you're not necessarily disclosing who that person is as they come through.
Wow. Listen, Jim Ryan, interesting stuff, and we got to find some way to keep our kids safe. It's getting ridiculous. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon, Jim Ryan, okay?
All right. Take care.
There you go.
Speaking of kids, Dwight, they can be smart, Alex.
Of course they can. I saw this story.
So I found this list. My apologies to those that will now have this in your head. So Whisper, it's a site, it's an app.
Yep.
Ask parents, what's the sassiest thing your kid ever said to you?
Oh, why did you do this to us with the baby shark?
They call it a clap back.
Okay.
Parents shared this. Yesterday, my son wouldn't eat his sandwich. I tried their starving kids all over the world thing. To my dismay, he told me to mail it to them then.
I said the exact same thing to my mother when I was a kid. They can have it if they want, Ma.
He's four. I told my son to use the same glass because I was sick of the sink filling up so quickly. He said it wouldn't be such a problem if I washed up more often. Oh, already.
I mean, listen, they're smart asses, but if you're not the receiving parent, you got to admit they're a little funny, right?
I like a little attitude.
Yeah, I do too.
Mars is not my kid.
Right, no kidding.
I told my son that as a parent, it's my job to be the boss. He replied, well, if you're the boss, where's my check? He's six.
Yes!
I told my kid the Lion King came out when I was a kid. She asked me if it was in color.
Wait, is the Lion King that old where somebody...
Well, the animated version came out, what, in the...
Oh, I guess you're right.
Mid-90s?
Oh, wow.
Yes, it's almost 30 years old,
oh,
if I had
gosh.
To guess. My daughter is pretty spoiled. Today she asked me for money for toys. I told her that money doesn't grow on trees. Her response... No, it comes out of a machine, so go get some.
I really like that.
It's literal.
I like some of these kids' answers.
I told my daughter it was nap time, and she said, no thanks, Mommy. Try something else. At least she was polite rejecting me.
Try something else.
I told my daughter that my new boyfriend was going to stick around. She replied with, yeah, Mom, that's what you said about Travis. I like these kids.
They could really hang
out in a restaurant. They'd be funny.
Yeah, no kidding. I like them.
I love this one. I told my son he had his shoes on the wrong feet. He told me these are the only feet I have.
It's like growing up with Don Rickles.
I know it is.
Hey, here's my kid, Don Rickles.
I told my daughter she was being a turd. She put her hands on her hips and told me it takes one to know one. I'm rubber, you're glue. Okay, I told my son, who's three, that good boys pick up their toys.
That's right. That's what good boys do.
He replied, guess I'm going to the corner then. Not going to pick him up. Going to take my punishment. That's from Whisper.
I'm hearing the music right now. It means Richard Marks is with Richard. How are you, man?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're doing great. Thanks for calling in. New book, new album, lots to talk about, but we're kind of short on time, so I want to get right to it. In your book, there's an interesting story. You're performing in Philly. All your jokes go over great. The songs go great. But the problem is you're doing it with a 104-degree fever.
Oh.
I've had a 103-degree fever, Richard, and it's miserable. Yeah. How the hell do you perform with a 104-degree fever, man?
Well, I think the only reason that I got through, and it happened five nights in a row on that run of shows. I had this mystery illness, which we never really figured out what it was. The answer to your question is, it didn't affect my voice, and my hair still looked good. So I just got it.
Yes.
Okay. As long as you brought up the hair, we're three guys in our 50s, and we used to have hair like you. How do you
really
keep it?
Hair.
I mean, what the heck?
I don't know, man. I'm just lucky. My old man lived to be, I mean, he passed at 73, but he still had a killer head of hair. And, you know, just blessed. The hair gods have kind to me.
Oh, they took it out on us, though.
I don't know how you don't have a shampoo deal. I don't know how you don't have some sort of commercial. There he is with the shampoo.
Hey, we're talking.
Well, make a call, man.
All right, you got it.
Hey, listen, man, I want to go back to the book because there's another chapter in there around the St. Elmo's Fire soundtrack years. And you meet a girl in L.A., you start having a few laughs, and her boyfriend shows up. So instead of bailing out on the situation, you invite them both to dinner. And you're not aware. You're into women and you're into your music, which is fine. You don't realize who the guy is. Who was the guy that was the boyfriend that you hung out with and didn't realize until they invited you to the home?
Well, this guy, you know, he was about my age, and he and I just hit it off. I thought his girlfriend was really super cute, but then he shows up, and I was like, oh, okay, so she's got a boyfriend. But he seemed like a nice guy, so we start hanging out. They live up in Canada, and we hit it off, and he says, hey, you got to come and hang out in Canada. And I said, oh, what do you do up here? He goes, I play hockey. Oh, okay, and I didn't know anything. I was, like, not following sports at all. I go up, I hang out with him, I go to a game, and, you know, his team wins. We end up going to a club after and, you know, drinking and hanging out. He drives me the next day to the airport where I head home, and this is pre, you know, 9/11, and yeah. You could still walk people to the gate. He walks me to the gate, gives me a hug goodbye, and I say, goodbye, Wayne. And it was Wayne Gretzky.
Oh, my God.
He didn't even realize it. And there's all kinds of stories, like in the new book. It's called Stories to Tell, a Memoir, as well as the new album, by the way, which is Greatest Hits. But I also, getting away from that for a second.
Let me play a little bit off his last album here. Okay. This was a hit on the AC chart last year. This is another one down.
Listen to you with those pipes still, man.
And the hair.
And the hair.
You know, I wrote this song with my son, Lucas.
Oh, cool.
Wow.
So before we get back to the book, I want to tell you that I saw the video you did with, it was an interview video you did with Paul Stanley last year during the lockdown. And I just want to, it was good stuff because it was two artists, two singers just sitting down, working unfiltered, live without a net, a raw chat. And I hope we get to see more of these down the road. But did you know Paul Stanley? Are you friends with these people you're doing these video segments with already?
No.
Wow.
No. And, you know, Paul was someone who I met really briefly, you know, 30 years ago. And, you know, here we are in lockdown. I started doing these little interview things. And Paul and I became acquainted through Twitter, of all places.
Oh, wow.
Like we started following each other on Twitter and exchanged a couple of, you know, messages. And you know, he seemed like a cool guy. So then we had that chat and felt like we'd been friends forever. And that turned into an actual friendship. You know, we hang out now. And
yeah.
We, you know, he's become, in fact, I swear this is true. I was having dinner with Daisy last night. And I get this we text each other all the time. I get this text from Paul saying, have you had a shingles vaccination?
hey, Richard, but guess what? Guess what? We are at that age where we have these conversations.
I'm telling telling you. It was like, and I just started laughing. I was like, he's like my big brother Paul is making sure I get my shingles back.
That's awesome. It seems like a few months ago I saw a Family Guy episode that you were featured in. How do you get approached to do these sorts of things? Do you just like MP3 them some audio? How does that work?
Well, no, the thing I did for Family Guy was actually, it's a really rare thing that in the history of their show where they did a live, you know, action thing. It was not animated. They animated a little boy who was supposed to be me as a kid, and then it cuts to me, you know, me in, you know, film. They've used Seth MacFarlane and that, the Family Guy people have used, referenced me a few times and used some of my songs over the years. But it turns out that the showrunner is an old friend of mine, Rich Appel, and so he rang me up. They actually used my wife Daisy in an animated thing the season before, and so he said, "Hey, it's your turn. I want you to be live action, and we're going to intercut it." So I filmed it at my house during the pandemic, and then they just cut it into the show. It was really funny. It was a blast.
It's weird that we have you on this day because right before I left the door to come to the studio, my wife said, "Hey, Richard Marx, Hold On to the Nights, 33 years ago today was number one." And I looked it up because I fact check, and sure enough, it was. You prevented Pour Some Sugar on Me from reaching the top. So it was 33 years ago, man. What made you want to do this book? Because, it's a big project.
Yeah. To be honest with you, it was not really an intention thing. It was just, in my live show, I tell stories and I kid around with the audience, and I have a lot of funny stories that have happened to me throughout my career, working with all kinds of artists and crazy stuff that's happened to me on the road. And to be totally honest with you, I didn't get serious about it until I got a book deal. And when I got a book deal, it was like, oh, okay, now I got to really write this book. And that coincided with the beginning of the pandemic, so I didn't have any excuse to not buckle down and, right, and get this thing written. It was actually a really enjoyable process for the most part. You know, right? It was a totally different kind of writing than songwriting. And I loved it. I actually really loved the process of it. And, the humble brag, the fact that it's now, and we get to put a sticker on it tomorrow, national bestseller. And,
how about that, man?
And the soundtrack album came in the top 10 last week. So I couldn't be more grateful for the support that, people have shown the book and the album.
Well, I got to tell you, it has a lot of fun stories in it. Richard Marx, thanks so much for the time. Good luck with the book.
Thanks, sir.
Good luck with the album. And we hope to hear from you again soon, okay?
Thank you, guys. Take care.
Hey, take care.
See you, man. I love the Paul Stanley story.
How about that?
Back in the day, it's how about those chicks at the show last night?
I know.
And now it's you get your shingles vaccine.
But it's the same thing with us. We come in and we ask all these, have you done this?
Yeah.
Hey, what
medication are you taking?
Hey, does this body part ever make a clicking noise on you all, or is it just me?
Welcome to Wednesday's Hero. Today's hero is Michael Fitzmaurice, Specialist 4th Class, U.S. Army. Name of the story is Fighting Blind. The place, South Vietnam, 1971. In the spring of 71, the 2nd Squadron of the 17th Cav was guarding the airstrip at Khe Sanh in South Vietnam for American planes flying missions into Laos. At about 2 a.m. on March 23rd, Michael Fitzmaurice, at the time 21 and one of the older men in his unit, had just returned from guard duty to his bunker living quarters. The North Vietnamese had been consistently mortaring American positions during the day, but the night seemed calm. Suddenly, shells started coming in again. Specialist 4th Class Fitzmaurice realized it was more than a mortar attack. When he looked out of the bunker and saw a large number of North Vietnamese enemy had charged through the perimeter wire and were inside the U.S. position on a suicide mission. Fitzmaurice and a buddy got out of the trench that connected the American sandbag position. Enemy sappers were everywhere. They tossed two explosive charges at Fitzmaurice, who managed to throw him back. The third one thudded into the ground near him. Figuring this was about to go off, he threw his flat jacket and his body over it. The explosion blew the door shut on the bunker, trapping the sleeping GIs inside, but their lives were saved. Fitzmaurice, on the other hand, suffered multiple wounds and was blinded in his left eye. As the enemy spread out throughout the area, he figured, well, the end's coming. Might as well go out fighting. So he got to his feet, barely able to see because the blood was running in his face. He climbed out of the trench and his buddy yelled directions to him. He began firing at the sappers. When a North Vietnamese grenade destroyed his rifle, he knelt down, felt around the ground for another. Suddenly an enemy soldier was on top, and he engaged the North Vietnamese in hand-to-hand combat, totally blind, and killed him. And he found another weapon, returned to the trench, and began to fire on the enemy again. He refused to be evacuated until the fight was over. Besides the loss of his sight, Fitzmaurice's eardrums were shattered, and he had shrapnel throughout his body. He was hospitalized for the next 13 months. In 1973, out of the service for about 2 years, he was working in a meatpacking plant when Washington called to inform him that he was going to receive the Medal of Honor. He traveled to the White House, where President Richard Nixon awarded him the medal on October 15th. Today's hero is Michael Fitzmaurice. He was born March 9th, 1950, in Jamestown, North Dakota, and currently lives in South Dakota. The name of the story is Fighting Blind.
Absolutely unbelievable as we honor our veterans every single Wednesday here. The men and women of the military, thank God for them. God love them all. As we bring in some veterans right here, right now, George and Rick from the Veterans MC, one of my favorite organizations. They do a lot of good for veterans. First of all, good morning, guys. How you doing?
Doing great.
Oh, wait a minute. Say something, George.
There we go.
There we go. Say something, Rick.
Doing good.
Now that you got microphones, you're doing good. Listen, you do a lot of good. You and the club, the MC, you do so much good for so many people. But particularly, one event each year happens, and this is the third year in a row. Talk about what's going down this weekend.
What we're having, we're having the third annual fundraiser memorial for two of our fallen brothers, Chris Blake and Glenn Cole. We're raising money for the Radcliffe Veterans Center in Radcliffe, helping them with some finances and create awareness for some of the services that they provide as well.
Okay, so there's an event this Saturday, right?
That's correct.
Okay, tell us the time of the event. Where is the event? Is it open to people who are not veterans? I know I attend every single year. I'm obviously not a veteran, but it is open to everybody, right?
It's open to everyone.
Okay.
Rain or shine, motorcycle, vehicle, whatever the case. This is a fundraiser, like George said, that mm-hmm. we do for the Pats. This will be the third one in a row. Raising money for the Radcliffe Veterans Center, you know, taking care of our heroes that stood up for their country,
right.
And now it's time to give back. The event this Saturday starts at 2 p.m. or 1400.
Okay. Wait. With the 1400, I always got to subtract the 12. 2 p.m.
At 14605 Dixie Highway. It's across the street from the LG&E plant.
Yeah, so if you see the LG&E plant, if you're heading towards Fort Knox on Dixie, it's on your left. If you're heading from Fort Knox, obviously on your right before you get to the LG&E plant. But often, listen, this will be the third year. I've been there the first 2 years. Plan on attending this Saturday as well, but there's always been great food. There's always been great raffle items and different things like that. Is that going to be the case on this Saturday as well?
Yes, of course. We'll have numerous door prizes, and we have a flamethrower as a grand prize raffle.
Okay, I'm not bringing my wife.
Yeah. So, yeah, we'll have, like I said, numerous items as door prizes throughout the later part of the day. We're also doing a presentation of a check to the Radcliffe Veterans Center. They'll have representatives there as well. So it'll be a good time for all.
Well, listen, first and foremost, thank you both for your service. And thank you more than that, man, just for your constantly, the Veterans MC is constantly looking out for their own and for the men and women that served. And the reason we have our liberties right now, is there a way, I'm going to share this event on my Facebook page so people can find out more. If you're forgetting, you're driving, you can go to my Facebook page and get the information. But with that said, is there a way that people can donate without attending? Or you guys have a way to get in contact with you, or you just need to go by for the donation?
Well, you can contact us on our Facebook page, Veterans Motorcycle Club, Jeff County, Kentucky.
Okay.
Or just stop by to have a good time.
Yeah, it's a great time.
Some stories and share, you know, good times.
It really is. It really is a good time. This Saturday, right across from the LG&E plant on Dixie Highway's Veteran MC. George, Rick, thank you so much for doing some good for the neighborhood and doing good for our veterans. God bless you both, and God bless everybody at the MC.
Thanks a lot, Dwight.
Thank you, guys.
You ready for a little story, Dwight?
Yes, let's do it.
We talk about criminals that you root for. You probably shouldn't, but, like, for some reason, jewel thieves and art thieves and criminals like this, we kind of, I don't know, pull for in a way.
Okay.
But it's interesting how these folks are brought to justice. And this one, considering your proclivity
for sharing
photographs.
Stop. Yes. Stop. And stop the damn music. What did we say about using college words around me?
What did I say?
Proclivity.
Oh, proclivity.
Yeah, so now tell me what proclivity.
Am I supposed to be anti-clivity?
No, but now I'm lost. Proclivity. One who proclivates.
Your tendency.
Okay.
His tendency has three syllables.
Now,
you okay?
Yeah, now we're back on track.
Okay, this is how you might be undone.
All right, here we go.
If you happen to be a master criminal. Scotland Yard busted the gang behind the biggest home invasion robbery in British legal history. It began Christmas 2019.
Wow.
Tamara Ecclestone, the model heiress daughter of diminutive small...
No
ex-Formula One boss Bernie Ecclestone.
No related to the Connecticut Ecclestone.
True dad. She announced that she and her family were jetting off to Lapland for the holidays with a picture of her daughter, Sophia, in front of a private jet, rubbing everyone's noses in it, you see. On the night they left, a gang of thieves broke into the family's home located on a street known as Billionaire's Row. The group were able to swipe about $30 million in cash, watches, and diamonds from the property. This was despite the fact that a security guard actually walked in on them, but they pushed past him and got out a window. Cops from the Mets flying squad, the crack team that investigates London's robberies, didn't have much to go on at first. Security camera footage from the property's garden showed the trio hot-footing it past a $12,000 replica of the main house that was used by Sophia as a playhouse. CCTV showed them getting into one of London's famous black cabs. So they contacted 1,006 taxi drivers who'd been working that night. They didn't have anything. Detective Constable Thomas Grimshaw then visited the hotel where they may have stayed based on a tip in January of 2020 and asked the receptionist if she remembered a group of young men staying there in mid-December. The chances now of remembering a particular guest was low, but she told the detective there was one group of potential suspects she remembered very clearly indeed. Because one of the group had sent her a Dwight pic.
Wait. By that you mean a picture of the nether region.
A picture of little Dwight.
Yeah.
He ended up being an Italian, 23-year-old Yugoslav Jovanovic. He sounds Italian.
Wait. Stop. I'm imagining a lineup of wee-wees. Okay,
no, that's not French. He's Italian.
And said, okay, ma'am, go in here and pick out the right one. Go ahead. Sorry.
He was under arrest. They had actually robbed a couple of owners of soccer teams. But because he hit on the receptionist and sent her a Dwight pic, 23-year-old Yugoslav Jovanovic is behind bars.
Wouldn't you like to see...
So, Dwight, if you ever took to a life of crime,
yeah,
keep your photos to yourself.
Right. But could you imagine the Scooby-Doo gang showing up and going, you thought you'd get away with it, but look at this picture. Like, zoinks. Hey, stick around. We're going to talk to Jim Ryan at the bottom of the hour and talk about the whole, what was that, the artificial...
I should have had Nigel do that story, actually.
Right, the artificial intelligence using to prevent school shootings.
Mm-hmm.
But so yesterday I was talking about how Susan and I watched The Gray Man.
Yeah, it's getting trashed on Rotten Tomatoes, but apparently people love it.
I saw that. I just saw this morning where it got 48% on Rotten. I don't know how to use Rotten Tomatoes. I guess 48% is bad, obviously.
It's an amalgamation. I'm sorry. It's a compilation.
Okay, there you go.
Of reviews from around the country to get kind of an aggregate. An average.
I do know aggregate number.
An average score. Okay, yeah.
Boy, it's hard communicating with me. But anyway, The Gray Man, we watched it. It was fantastic.
What's it about?
It's like a CIA hitman type thriller.
Okay.
And it's really freaking
movie
good.
Or series?
It's a movie. But now Netflix is saying they have announced that The Gray Man is also the start of a movie universe, whatever that may be. I guess it's more movies.
It means capitalize with merchandise and more movies.
Absolutely does. Ryan Gosling, the star, he's set for a spinoff sequel.
He should have played Goose.
Right.
Maybe a young one.
I didn't know this, but evidently the movie's based on a book series. So evidently they're not going to have any trouble finding more scripts, right?
Nope, obviously not.